Hey, this is Scott from Voyager, and you're listening to the 9-8 Podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, dear listeners from around the globe, wherever you are. Thank you for tuning in to the 9-8 Podcast, the home of everything progressive and underground in the way of music and beyond. My name is David Ellis, and this week, with Hoggy and myself being amidst moving and a whole bunch of different weird stuff that's going on, we decided we were going to record an interview. So this is a very special episode of the 9-8 Podcast, where I am going to be joined by another member of the music community, and we're just going to basically shoot the shit for about an hour. So this will be very, very, very fun. So this is a bit of an interview that I've wanted to do for some time, since I first saw these guys in January this year playing at Progfest here in Sydney. I really wanted to interview one of the guys from Voyager. And this Perth-based band has just been kicking goals, really quite a lot of goals actually this year. Their style is probably one of the most interesting styles of prog that's coming out of Australia right at the moment, along with some of the other heavy hitters like Carnival and Osaka Punch. And I'm really, really happy to say that I have Scott Kay, one of the guitarists from Voyager, joining me here right now. So hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I am really, really, really well. It was a gorgeous day here in Sydney for a change. How's it over there on the West Coast?
It's actually just like... Sorry, there's a bit of story about this. My housemate has a thing about weather and about when the seasons change, and he gets really finicky when people are like, oh, it's the first day of September, it must be spring. And it's like, no, spring's in like 3 weeks.
Yeah, and the equinoxes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, science and stuff. he's so like, it's like his pet peeve. But to answer your question in a roundabout way, it now feels like spring. Like it feels like it's just hit, which is really nice. So it's good over here.
That is good. That's good to hear. Now, just before we sort of dive into some of the more trickier questions, which I'm assuring you there won't be too many of, I noticed this afternoon that you guys changed your profile picture on Facebook to be sort of like is it a hashtag 1 or a hashtag 7 or something like that on Facebook. Is that something to do with the new album?
Sure is. Yeah, we're it's definitely not our first album, that's for sure. It's in fact our 7th album, which is pretty crazy to think about, to be honest. It's been a long journey, but a good one nonetheless. So we're now that we're back from tour, we kind of did a bunch of locations this year. We're just heading back into our little jam room and riding away. So, you know, hopefully some good stuff comes out of it.
Yeah, I mean, as a big fan myself, and I'm sure I can speak for a lot of the other fans around, we can't wait to see what you guys come up with. But you guys have been around since about 1999. Element V or Element 5, however you want to say that, was one of your first releases.
And you guys go on record as saying that it's definitely Element V. That was actually something that we had when we first went over to America. We had a bunch of fans who had never seen us live before go, I love your album, Element 5. We're like, should I correct this guy right now? It feels rude. So just for the record, it is definitely Element V, but please continue.
Because you guys were all at UWA, weren't you? And that's sort of how it all began, all sort of formed, if you will. But you weren't part of the band originally.
No, I joined, just trying to think now, Christ, a while ago, for Meaning of I. From Meaning of I onwards is when I was a part of the band. So yeah, the band kind of started when I was, 9, 10 years old, which is, scary to think about. But, I think with all of the new members, the band sort of evolved and changed quite dramatically over the years. We basically don't sound anything like what the band used to sound like right at the beginning. But I guess you can kind of expect that with new members and fresh perspective.
You always do get that. I mean, one of my favorite bands of all time, which is Dream Theater, since Portnoy left, has changed quite dramatically. There was a bit of a shift in your sound, though, between your fifth album and your sixth album, so V, and Ghost Mile. What was the genesis of that? Because to me, and correct, please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but V seemed to have a little bit more of a sort of a punk rock element or punk rock elements to it. Whereas Ghost Mile was actually one of my favorite albums from last year. Not saying that V was a bad album, but it was a very, very prog driven album. So where was the genesis of that change?
Interesting you say punk. That's actually the first time I've heard someone have that opinion. That's cool. It's kind of interesting to see how an outside perspective can be so broad. I think we kind of wanted to go into Ghost Mile with a bit more of a concise idea of what we wanted to do. I feel like V is very explorative and there's lots of different elements to that record that we all like really enjoy, but we wanted to go into writing this new record with a little bit more of a cohesive writing style. And this is also the first time in the band's history where we've actually had a stable lineup for two records in a row, which is pretty crazy. Each record prior to that has at least one member different. So that was sort of a unique element in it as well, that we're like, okay, well, we've already done a record as this group together. We want to do our best to better it in a way. We can't really rely on new members kind of shifting things. So I think one of the reviews that we had for V was that it was too long. so we're like, we gave them too much value. Maybe we should strip that back a bit. But we kind of went in with this idea of, trying to be a little bit more cohesive with the songwriting. I guess in terms of the writing process, it was just about as collaborative as V was. There's a lot of our process, we get into a jam room, we write ideas, but then we spend time in our respective studios working on our own parts as well. Uh-huh. And it's kind of that back and forth that makes it you're able to kind of take a step back and analyze the music more. When you're only doing stuff in the jam room, it's kind of you're running on impulses and you're running on what you're feeling in the moment. Sometimes that's a great thing. Sometimes it can lead you down bad paths or paths that make things sound almost like you're a jam band in a way. So we kind of like to do that back and forth. And I think we're just getting better at doing that process. It's hard to say, man. When it comes to writing music, so much of it is just, it comes out of some dark abyss somewhere in the back of your head. And then it kind of comes together on the page. So I don't know what to say, really.
It is interesting that you say that you guys sort of jam together and then you go and work on your own parts almost individually. And then I assume you obviously come back and put it all together and record the album. How do you go about, and this, maybe you don't have this problem, but in bands that I have been in, there's always been ego problems. How do you overcome, for example, if you were to say to Sim, hey, could you possibly do this instead of doing that? Do you find that's an issue in your band or not really?
Honestly, not really, man. I think we all agree collectively that writing music is about writing for the song and not for the self. Mm-hmm. We're lucky in that respect because I think we all have a fairly good idea as to where we feel the song should be heading. So the fact that we're all heading north rather than, two of us heading east and, in terms of what we're feeling in the song, the fact that we all have a kind of a good idea as to what should be done next or have ideas that are at least similar to one another means we don't really butt heads all that often. But really, if someone says, man, I'm not feeling that idea, it's just a matter of pocketing it and saying, yeah, okay, sure, let's work on something else. You really do have to put your ego aside. I think you're right that the ego problem is the one thing that's going to stifle you as a creative group the most. And it's just, you just have to serve the song at the end of the day. If what you're doing isn't working, you just have to give it up and hope someone else has a better idea. That's basically it.
Yeah. And talking of, you know, your ideas and so on and so forth, they obviously come from somewhere. So what's on the playlist at the moment for yourself? Say, what's the last five albums that you've listened to?
Man, I've been doing a lot of revisiting of stuff. I think in terms of new material, the bands that I've listened to recently that I've really enjoyed, there's a UK band called Loathe.
Yep.
I'm not sure if you've heard of them. They're kind of like, I wouldn't even know how to describe it. It's like, I would describe it as like smart man's hardcore. where it's like they're super proficient on their instruments, and they've got really good songwriting capacity, and they've just got a good ear for sounds, and so their records sound really thick and fucking heavy, but they've got all these really cool synths, and it's just layered really nicely. So their album that they released last year called The Cold Sun is something that I've been spinning quite a bit recently. For me, the Deer Hunter are literally always on repeat. Like, that band, as far as I'm concerned, has trumped all of my other artists as probably my favorite band of all time, which is huge for me to say because I'm the biggest Devin Townsend nerd there ever was. And obviously going back and listening to some of the old Devin Townsend stuff as well, like I've recently revisited Ocean Machine again.
Yes.
And some of the stuff that we've been doing, like there was a song that we were jamming and writing that kind of had a real Ocean Machine kind of vibe. So I wanted to kind of revisit that and maybe draw some inspiration from it. What else? Actually, there's a John Hopkins record that's really cool that I've been spinning heaps lately called Immunity, which is just like really cool electronic stuff. I know next to nothing about how electronic music is like genre-fied because I know that there's like 1,000 different styles out there.
Yep.
So I have no idea what his stuff would fall under, but I love it nonetheless, and Immunity is just a killer record. I'm just kind of all over the place at the moment, man. I haven't been listening to new albums, like new releases. I've been kind of just taking a bit of a trip down memory lane, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there's always room for that, and I mean that's certainly something that I've been doing. Well, the last little while is just keeping everything going, and revisiting a lot of stuff myself. Here on the 9-8 podcast, myself and Hoggy are actually about to do an episode on The Astonishing by Dream Theater. That album obviously got quite a lot of flack, so we've been re-listening to it, and we're going to do a whole episode on actually reviewing it before their new album is eventually announced and released.
Yeah, right.
So that'll be...
What's your hot take on that record? Because I haven't actually sat down and listened to it. I look at it and just go, fuck, this thing is really long, man. it's kind of overwhelming.
It is a really long album. It's very ambitious. It was a very ambitious attack for them. It sort of doesn't know what it wants to be, in my opinion. But the big thing that lets it down is that James does all the parts still. So in my opinion, it would have been better if they had have got some guest vocalists in to do all the different parts, because it wasn't written, if you compare it to, say, Metropolis Part 2, where it was written as a story, as someone outside looking in, which worked really well with a single vocalist. One is a lot of I did this, we did that, you know, that kind of thing, and that doesn't compute as well, I don't think. I mean, that's just me.
When you've got the single voice narrating multiple characters, you're kind of like, who's this character again? You kind of get lost in who is who, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. And if you look at some of the covers on YouTube and such, that's what they did. They actually separated the parts out, and it works really well. And seeing that, you can kind of understand where everything was coming from. And I think we missed quite a lot here in Australia without seeing the stage show, because they never actually brought the show here. They skipped the Astonishing Tour. Australia on the Astonishing Tour.
Yeah.
Which is a bit...
They're not exactly renowned for coming to Australia, man. Like, the first time they came was like, what, 2008?
2008, January 2008. Yep.
Yeah.
And I remember... Sydney show.
Yeah, I remember going to the Perth show and their in-ear monitoring system just fucked out. And so we got 2/3 of a set.
Yes.
Which was pretty brutal, considering everyone who was there was like, I've been waiting for, you know, between 10 to 15 years for this gig. Yeah, it was pretty savage, but no, what can you do if you have technical problems at that level, you know?
Exactly. How about yourselves? What do you guys do if you have technical issues? Because I know you guys use a lot of like Axe FXs and things like that. So do you guys run with backup rigs? Do you what happens if you have some sort of a major technical malfunction at a gig?
Man, we've actually taken to going as light as possible because, you know, when you're dealing with international touring, you get hosed on excess baggage and we just can't afford it. So we've actually got no backups for pretty much anything. So I don't have a backup Axe FX. I don't have a backup guitar. Nothing. So far, so good. We've had a
touch wood.
Yeah. In terms of the only issues we've really had have been with our playback, our stereo playback. But I mean, it's only stuffed up any, you know, like twice or three times ever. And it's usually just some random fault, usually a user fault, if anything. So we've just tried to set up the show to be as streamlined and as easy to set up as possible with as few moving parts as possible. So that way, you know, if it came down to it and something completely train wrecked, then I guess we would just try and find a replacement at the venue if we could manage one from a support or something like that. But thankfully, we haven't had to do that. But I think a lot of that is probably because we don't run a very complicated setup. Our setup is pretty straightforward. Like Danny's got self-contained in-ears. Ash has got self-contained clicks. The backing track is literally just a stereo out. So it's a very simple setup. So there's very few things that could go wrong, I guess.
And I remember seeing you guys at Progfest, as I mentioned in the intro there. And the sound that you guys had was huge alongside your actual stage presence, despite not having, I mean, you're not exactly Iron Maiden running around a stage with a giant Eddie at the back or anything like you know.
I wish.
To play to those awesome crowds.
Yeah, right.
Back to when you first joined the band, was there anything in particular that you had to hone? Did you have to hone your stage presence? Did you, you know, have to actually sit down and block out what you were going to do in particular songs, or do you just sort of feel it on the moment?
It's all felt, yeah. It's really, I think some people have said in the past, you know, either these guys are genuinely having a good time or they're the best actors I've ever seen. and it's the former, man. We love performing. It's to us, like, this is something that I kind of talk to the band about because I'm also in another band called Statues, which is more of like a hardcore band. But I took a lot of inspiration from bands like Dillinger Escape Plan and The Chariot and bands that really, really perform in an aggressive way, you know. And I guess Voyager is one step back from that. But the thing that I wanted to kind of bring forward in what I do at the very least is that we're entertainment. You know, we're not just art. We're there to entertain people. And if we look bored, then I wouldn't expect the audience to feel entertained.
Yeah.
And that is a failure on the band, as far as I'm concerned. We are entertainment. That's our priority, is to get out there and give people an awesome show. So we take a lot of pride and we also work really hard to make sure that we're always going to be able to deliver that show. But I mean, the good thing is that it's so easy because it's just fun. It's just, we have fun. Like, how hard is it to have fun playing music on stage, performing to great people? You know, it's like the best job ever. So for us, it's effortless just because it's an enjoyable process anyway. And when you deal with all of the other shit that you deal with as a band, you get that 45 minutes to an hour and a half on the stage to make it all worthwhile. And it almost always is. So yeah, I think that's probably why it just comes out of us. It's not a thing that we've ever had to sit down and discuss. It's just, you get up there, you have a sick time, you convert a few new people in the audience, and entertain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is a particularly special gift, I think, for people that can get up and play in front of a lot of people and just naturally be able to, you know, do whatever it is that they want to do. I'm unfortunately not one of those people. I sort of have to pre-learn things.
Do you feel like it's a nerve based thing for you, or?
No, it's funny, you know. If I've played in quite a few bands throughout my life. I'm relatively sure. I think we're the same age, actually. I'm 28.
Yeah.
So
I'm 29. So have you already turned 28 this year?
Or? I have. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we're
89. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, for me, it's not a nerve thing. I don't think. I think I just feed off the other people in the band. So if I'm playing with musos who are also having a lot of fun, and you can run up beside them when one's doing a guitar solo and, you know, sort of put you back to theirs and just have fun in that kind of thing, then it makes the world a difference as opposed to guys who are sort of playing with concrete boots.
Totally. In fact, you know, you're right. I think there is quite a lot of feeding off of each other. It's not just an audience thing. It's also a band thing. Hmm. And so the fact that we all collectively like to perform in very similar ways, I think is you're totally right. I think that is a huge part of it. If everyone else in my band was just like standing there, I would feel like an absolute moron just kind of running around and being a dickhead on stage. It just wouldn't look right. But the fact that we're all kind of flailing about like idiots makes it makes it work, you know.
So can I just ask real quickly, the lyrical content for your latest album, Ghost Mile, I was actually listening to it last night at band practice with the singer from my band, Matt, and he was sort of going, oh, it's really cool stuff. It's sort of like hopeful prog metal, because it does seem to not have a lot of that minor chord sort of, you know, a lot of metal is based around, you know, D minor or what have you. Your stuff is far more like, he likened it to an airliner that's just getting ready to take off.
Cool.
So how do you go about sort of writing that sort of stuff? Is it mostly sort of the lyrical melody really takes things off, but you've got the backbone obviously of all the guitars and all the crazy awesome riffs that come out of things. How do you go about writing some of that stuff? Do you literally just sit down and play and record it and then just see what comes out of it, or?
At least from my perspective, like I love music that can provide like a visual stimulus. Mm-hmm. I don't have synesthesia or anything like that. It's more like, you know, I get this with Devin Townsend a lot, and that's what kind of drew me to his music when I was younger, was like I would listen to Ocean Machine and imagine being on a wide open sea. And so for me, it's kind of like, how do I get a certain scene or a certain mood to be depicted sonically? And I think to me, maybe some of the stuff that I contribute to Voyager has some of that hopefulness kind of embedded into it, because that's kind of what I aim for. Is I aim for like stuff that's groovy, fun, uplifting. Whereas I feel like a lot of Danny's lyrical content is introspective and a little bit dark at times. Mm. But it's that juxtaposition, I think, that kind of works for us in a way. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, the other cool thing about music is that it's all interpreted differently. Some people interpret some of Voyager stuff as being really dark and really heavy. Some people see it as like some of the poppiest stuff they've ever heard. Mm. I think the one thing that's been a common thread with Voyager is the fact that people seem to interpret it pretty differently, which is cool. Like, it's really awesome to hear what it is that people are hearing in the music, especially for me. Cause again, like when I hear someone say it sounds like a jetliner taking off, I'm like, that's fucking cool. Mm. I would have never thought of that image in my head, but hearing someone else have that image is really awesome. So,
I do have to ask a very quick question as well for Hoggy. On, I think it was Friday night, you played with Polyphia and Intervals.
Yeah.
What was the first song you guys opened with?
That was Ascension.
It was Ascension. Okay, because we had this conversation the other day when we were talking about it. We actually recorded an episode on Sunday just gone, and I was actually seeing them that night. And we had James Norbert Ivani.
Yeah,
here in Sydney support. They had Awesome Wells was supporting, I think, down in Melbourne, and you guys over in Perth, which is just a monster of a lineup, you know, for all those three bands to support them. And he said, I actually missed the first song because he had to go and he had to go and get cash out to pay for the ticket because he bought a ticket on the door. Which was, I know. I had to wrap him across the knuckles for that one. And the last time you guys were all together was Progfest this year. Obviously, Progfest has been announced again. Are you guys going to be on the bill?
We are not, sadly, unless we kind of get thrown on at last minute. No, I mean, I looked at the announcement and went, oh, that would have been pretty cool to play. But obviously getting to play with our good mates in Leprous was also just an absolute pleasure. So, yeah, I mean, those shows at the beginning of the year were just, they were so good. To me, it was just a ray of hope because sometimes, you know, playing progressive music, you think to yourself, it's like, man, this stuff is just for nerds. Like, no one, honestly, no one cares. No one's going to rock up, you know. We're all a bunch of geeks sitting there with our 8-string guitars, essentially a bunch of bedroom musos or whatever, playing on a stage. But, like, the turnouts were wild, like, massive. I think we had something like between six to 800 people at each show. Which is just unreal for progressive music in Australia, you know. So that I think there's really been this like renaissance in progressive music, both, you know, of the classical sense of prog and like where it's heading, like all the instrumental stuff that's going on at the moment too. So yeah, Progfest is just one of those like, you know, shining beacons of hope for the progressive music scene here in Australia. So I'm stoked to see it kind of growing more and more.
Yeah. That was, I think, one of the things that really impressed me about Progfest. This was the first year that I'd been. And it was the fact that there was so many people there for seeing seeing these bands that, I mean, let's face it, there's next to no radio play. There's not a lot of Spotify plays by comparison to your bigger artists, you know, your more popular artists. But then to have to walk into, at least here in Sydney, the Factory Theatre, and to have all these prog nerds hanging out around you and you're just having these conversations with these really cool people. Yeah, it was really heartwarming for me, being a massive prog head from way back. So you mentioned Devin Townsend is a big influence of yours. What are your what are your top sort of five influences? If you had to pick, say, five albums or five bands that you really credit your a lot of your playing to, and a lot of your influence from, who would they be?
Oh man,
asking the tough questions tonight.
This is a hard one, but it's a good one. I think in terms of a sequence, I think Devin was the biggest. I think Dev takes the top tier for me because I found him at a very important point in my life, which is like my mid, you know, my early to mid teens. I think my brother had bought Accelerated Evolution. And he was listening to it in the front lounge. I can remember it clear as day. And it was Deadhead that was cranking. Right. So I walk through the door. At this point in my life, I'm like, I want something that's heavy, but super melodic, but super atmospheric, like stuff that reminds me of being in outer space, but is also heavy and you know, catchy and melodic. And I walk through the door and I hear Deadhead and I'm like, dude, what is this? Tell me what this is right now. Because this is literally the thing that I've been trying to find for my entire life. At this point, only being 14, you know, hadn't been around long enough. But either way, nothing's really compared to that, in my opinion. So for me, I think it was like just the fact that he was writing stuff that I had kind of concocted in my head as to what I wanted to listen to. And nothing has really even come close to that experience again in my life is pretty, like, for me, that's really profound. So he takes the top medal for that. But I think the Deer Hunter would have to be up there for me as well, just because of just the general creativity and the songwriting skills. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure how much of the Deer Hunter you've listened to.
Not a lot, to be honest with you. I think, you know, one or two songs maybe. And even then it might just be a sort of a Spotify sort of flipping through kind of thing. Yeah. I know the name, but that's as far as it goes.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this band has basically done no wrong for its entire career. And what's cool about it is it's progressive, but it's got all kinds of just influences in it. Like they have a whole series of albums called The Acts, which are basically a full six-part story. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about it is that each record has themes that kind of come and go throughout the album, but then there's also album to album themes and ideas that come back, both lyrically and musically. So luckily I was kind of listening to these guys when they first started releasing music. So I've got to listen to them pretty much chronologically. I haven't had to do any backpedaling.
That's pretty good.
Which is great, because I got to listen to Act 1, then Act 2, Act 3, listen to it all in chronology. So it's almost like there are these little musical statements that kind of come back and I go, oh man, this is from Act 2 or whatever. It's just, the songwriting is just so clever and so good. Casey, as far as I'm concerned, is a genius. He's just, his songwriting is incredible. Michelle Nadigia Cello would have to be up there for me as well.
Ooh, okay.
Have you heard her before?
Yes.
Yep. For me, Comfort Woman is one of my favorite records of all time.
Okay.
It's just like, there's something about that record. It just feels like a warm hug. But it's coming from a perspective from someone who feels damaged. It's dark, but it's sort of like a voice saying, man, it's going to be okay. And to me, I think that's why I love the record, because it just, it does feel like a woman comforting me in a way. So, I love that record. That record to me is a really special one. And honestly, I love her. I love her voice. I love her bass playing. Like, I'm primarily a bass player, and moved to guitar later on. So I studied a lot of her stuff when I was in university. She's a really important one for me. There's probably a pretty large leap down from those three as far as I'm concerned. Maybe Opeth would be up the top there for me as well.
Yep.
And probably Opeth at Dream Theater, if I'm honest. Like, Dream Theater was one of those bands that I also studied when I was a teenager. That band got my technique up like something fierce. Mm-hmm. So in terms of like just sheer musicianship, I think both Opeth and Dream Theater were too heavily influenced. Heavily influential bands in terms of just like getting my shit together musically.
Yeah.
I was
very much the same with Dream Theater. I remember a very good, do you know the band The Helix Nebula?
Yeah.
So Stephen Taranto, the guitarist, one of the guitarists from there.
What a ridiculous guitarist he is. Oh my God.
He introduced me to Dream Theater.
He
was the guy. Right. Long story short, I was having a conversation. He knew his girlfriend at the time was my best mate's god sister or something. And we're at his place, and we were talking, and I was all of 13, and he said, have you heard of Dream Theater? I'm like, please, Metallica's better than them, because, you know, I knew everything at 13. And he was like, okay, cool. And then a couple of days later, he gave me Train of Thought.
Yeah.
And it had just come out, and he said, I've got this copy. I've ripped it here. Rip it. I never gave it back. I've still got it.
That's mine now.
it was the killing moment. And then I heard Lines in the Sand, but the live version from Once in a Lifetime in Paris in 97.
Yeah.
And that was the moment where I just went, that's what I want to sound like, that guy right there. And that was it. It was all over, you know. So all that. It's funny how these things. And it was funny hearing you talk about listening to Devin, hearing Devin for the first time. That's exactly how it happened with me in Dream Theater. Just sitting in my room listening to this As I Am start. You know, this weird choral thing starting it, and then it all just kicked in. And I just went, Okay. Whoa. This is it.
Yep. This is going to be a long journey, but it's going to be a good one.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. It's kind of cool because like I work as a music teacher for a living. And for me, that's something that I want to try and get my students to kind of understand is that a lot of the time it is that sort of defining click with a certain musician or a certain artist or a certain band that makes you go, whoa, okay, this music thing is awesome. And I really want to pursue this to whatever extent I can. And it's usually built around, finding that one artist that seems to just click with you for whatever reason.
Mm. And it can be any artist. I mean, this is the thing. You look at the kids in Polyphia, and whilst I wasn't really a big fan of their stage antics the other evening, musically they're amazing. And they come from a very different area. You know, they come from like a hip-hop background, and you can see that in not only the way they act, but also in how they produce their music, the sounds, the scale, even down to the scales they're using. And just because someone necessarily isn't into hip hop or is into hip hop or is into prog or metal or anything like that, doesn't necessarily. I'm a massive fan of blues. I've got released a couple of solo blues albums myself, and people when I meet them at concerts and so on and so forth, and they're like, "Oh, you're the guy from the Dream Theater Fan Club. Yeah, cool. You must play in a prog band." Actually, I don't. I play in a heavy rock band and I love blues music. It's what? So it's really interesting how you get almost boxed into these things. But music seems to be one of those things where even if you do have sort of a boxed in moment, people then go, "Oh yeah, that's really cool."
Absolutely. I think it's I think that trend generally is starting to fade now that more and more people are kind of consuming or discovering music online. And even with the image, like when you look at heavy bands these days compared to heavy bands in the 80s, it's like when you see an 80s metal band, you know exactly what they look like. They all have like long hair. Some of them have beards. Some of them are clean shaven. They're wearing thrash metal jackets. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got the whole image. Whereas if you were to say, what does a heavy band in 2018 look like? And you're like, man, it could look like the dude that lives down the street from me.
That's right.
And there are certain cool elements to that I really like. You obviously lose a little bit of that like identification and that group, you know, like being a part of a group per se. Mm-hmm. But I think the benefits you get from that are that you suddenly feel more free to take inspiration from whatever the hell you like. There used to be a negative stigma of metal musicians being into pop. And I think that has gone away almost entirely, and I think that's gone away for the good. And I think that it's everything is so much better now that we can just more freely appreciate music.
Yeah, agreed. I'm a massive fan of Taylor Swift prior to, and I'll say it openly, prior to the Red album, you know, back when she was actually a country rock star. Totally. Because some of the stuff there is very, very good, extremely well written musically. You know, it's
good arrangements. Yeah, there's 100%. Lots of interesting instruments, and because I remember. Student of mine wanted to learn one of her tunes. It was one of her older ones, and I was like, whoa, there's like all kinds of cool stuff going on in this song.
And a lot more complex than a lot of people give it credit for.
Totally. I think pop music in general is very good at hiding complexity.
Yes. I mean, if you look at some of the drum beats in a lot of the Katy Perry songs, they are extreme. They sound extremely simple, but when you actually break them down, you're going, wait, hang on, what are you doing there? Okay, you're playing a polyrhythm.
Yeah.
Why? It's really interesting.
You know who's really good at this is Stevie Wonder.
Yes.
All kinds of crazy stuff going on in his music. Living for the City, that chorus is, I think it's descending whole tone major chords.
Yes.
And when you listen to it, you're like, man, that melody is really catchy. That whole thing. Yeah, the chords underneath it are completely ridiculous. But you could sing that melody, you know, a person who knows nothing about theory could sing that melody with no problems. It's really genius songwriting.
Yeah, I agree. It is very interesting on a lot of that sort of stuff. how we sort of, as you say, people are becoming far more, I think, worldly when it comes to music. I've just pulled up your page here, just back on Voyager for a second. I've noticed.
Let me just pull up your file.
My girlfriend,
it says here that you are.
my girlfriend started playing Heavy Rain the other day. She had her wisdom teeth out, and she was at my place for the weekend. I was sort of looking after her, so yeah. It was sort of an excuse to sit on the lounge and play, you know, PlayStation. And we were playing Heavy Rain, and she'd never played it. And I don't know if you've played it, but there's a guy in it, and he's got these augmented reality glasses, and he pulls up a filing cabinet, and he's sitting at a desk, and there's nothing there, but he's going through files, and it's yeah. That's very cool. But I pulled up your file, and I noticed you're the only one in the band who's not endorsed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm using Ernie Ball strings, so I know that they're kind of looking after me in that respect.
Yeah,
I mean, honestly, I did have a little thing with Ibanez briefly for a time, and that was when Simone was also using Ibanez.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, these things take a while. I don't have much of an expectation to make something of an endorsement. I think it's, I would like to feel like I'm providing something to them first.
Mm.
Obviously, you know, these kind of relationships have to be a mutually beneficial thing. So I totally understand why companies would want to be very specific about who they get to be on their rosters or whatever.
Of course.
But yeah, I mean, at the moment I'm loving my Mayonnaise guitar, and I think that if I could try and lock something in with those guys, that would be amazing, because I think that they're a really cool brand, and I'm loving both their guitars and their basses, to be honest with you. Both myself and Alex are using Mayonnaise at the moment.
Yeah.
And Alex is a Mayonnaise endorsee.
Mm-hmm.
I think just within Australia, but we're going to try for something with those guys, maybe in the near future, maybe on this album cycle. Because yeah, I want to use more of their instruments and kind of be a Mayonnaise patriot. Just cause yeah, I think their guitars are just totally sick. I love them.
Yeah, it was just a little fact I just noticed as I was flicking through the old Wikipedia here. We should probably start looking at wrapping this up, because you've been very grateful in that you've given me so much of your time tonight, and it's absolutely brilliant always chatting
to
musos all around. One question, just two questions remaining. One thing that we do like to do on the podcast is whenever we have guests, and Hoggy and I actually do it every fortnight when we're doing the podcast, we recommend each other an album to listen to.
Okay.
So I'm putting you on the spot. I'm aware of that. But I'd love you to recommend me an album, and I'll do the same for yourself. And I'd love to find out what you thought about it later on in the future.
That's a great idea. I like this. This is very cool. How's about you go first, because I will try and find something here that is worth giving you.
Yeah, absolutely, no problem. I am just going to flick through my Spotify, because I did hear something this morning that I really liked. On that note, side note, have you listened to the new Dead Letter Circus yet?
No, I haven't gotten around to it. Danny has and says he loves it.
It is.
He thinks it's a great record.
It's extremely good. I'm going to give you an album by a band called Christine and the Queens.
Okay.
I
can't say I've ever heard them.
They're a French nouveau pop group.
Right.
And the album that I'm going to give you is their 2014 album called Chaleur Humaine. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, because it is French. Unfortunately, I do speak German, but my French is atrocious. definitely Ooh. Have a listen to that. And one track in particular to look out for is, if you're listening to it on Spotify, it's called Tilted. But try really hard to listen to the one on YouTube, because it's the original French version. And it's called Christine. And for some reason, they changed the names and they've changed all the lyrics and everything, and it doesn't make any sense in English.
Okay.
You know, but definitely try and check it out. It's a good, it's a really fun album.
That sounds wild. Okay. I'll give that a solid listen. I haven't, the name hasn't even come up on any of my radars. So that's
You might like it. You might hate it. You never know.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, that's the beauty of music, right?
Indeed.
you listen to something on a whim and you make up your own mind.
That's exactly it.
I think just because I was kind of talking about them and that was something that somebody you haven't actually gotten around to really getting deep on is the Deer Hunter, and I think I think you would really like Act 3, Life and Death.
Okay.
The cool thing about this band and about the acts in general is that I don't think you don't need to start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. If you want to follow the story, then you can do that. But what's great about this band is that even when they're writing in this format, each record stands on its own two feet and makes a whole ton of sense anyway. So I think Act 3 has just incredible production compared to Act 1 and Act 2, which sort of were mostly home recorded. Act 3 has this real polished kind of sound and just has some absolute bangers on it. Like there's a tune called Mustard Gas that just has the hugest chorus, and yeah. It's just a wicked record. The whole concept behind it is basically that the main character goes to war, essentially. Nice. So it kind of travels through all kinds of different moods. But yeah, there's sort of stuff that sounds akin to Mars Volta, but then there's stuff in there that sounds like Muse. Like yeah, it's just a wicked album. So. Yeah, Act 3, Life and Death.
All right, I'll put that on the Spotify listening list. Let's try this when my mouth is actually going to work. I'll put that on the Spotify listening list and give that a listen on the way to work tomorrow morning.
Awesome.
So final question for you, and this is a question I like to end all my interviews on, and it's okay if it stumps you, and the answer can be about absolutely anything.
Okay.
Tell us something we don't know.
Is this a we as in us as a race of humans?
It can be anything. Anything at all.
Yeah, man, that is a stumper. Okay. What's a completely useless factoid? Oh, I know one. Me and Ash were discussing what the probability of rolling a Yahtzee on the first roll is. And it apparently is 1 in 1,296. Or 0.08%.
There you go.
Yeah. So if you're ever playing Yahtzee, well, you're going to have to roll those dice over 1,000 times.
That's all right. We'll take a gamble on it. So look, Scott, thank you so much for joining the 9-8 podcast here with us this evening. Thanks for giving up your time. It's absolutely fantastic. To all the listeners, if you guys haven't checked out Voyager, I have been banging on about these guys now for like 13 or 14 episodes. Please go and check them out. They're absolutely brilliant. Their latest album, which is Ghost Mile, is definitely one to check out, but just start at the start, go all the way through. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem. We'll chat. We'll probably chat when you guys tour Sydney next.
Yeah, man. Definitely. I think I'm trying to think of what we got. Oh, we do have something in the works, but we'll hopefully be announcing that pretty soon, but just keep your ear out. I can't talk about it just yet. But it should be good.
Oh, that's going to be enough to get the fans all frothing. So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Thank you again, mate. We'll chat soon. Sir.
Thank you. See ya.
Thanks, bye. And thank you very much to everyone listening in on this episode, this very special Artist Spotlight episode with Scott from Voyager. My name is David Ellis, and next fortnight, Hoggy and I will be reunited once again in the studios on our respective coasts, and we'll be talking about all the latest in prog music. Hope to see you then. Thanks very much for listening in. See you next time.